Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Today is Tuesday, May the 5th, and today we're going to be talking about something that is fairly controversial in libertarian circles pretty much unknown outside of our little philosophical club. And we're going to be talking about an introduction to the philosophy of minarchy. And, you know, it's a lot harder to explain what minarchy is to people than anarchy. You know, there's a lot of anarchists, of course, in the libertarian movement. And anarchists know what a minarchist is. They despise minarchists. They think that they are a contradiction in terms, you know. But the website that you probably are listening to this show on is called The Libertarian Republic for a Reason. So the idea is that minarchy is the advocacy of a minimal state. They call it a night watchman state. Frequently on the show Freedom Watch, of which I was formerly a producer for Judge Andrew Napolitano, we often called the judge the Night Watchman, and that was for a good reason. We called him the Night Watchman. Of course, I used to run his social media pages when I was there at Fox, and whenever we would post, a lot of times we would call the judge the Night Watchman. A lot of our copy would be the Night Watchman, and that was particularly because of the influence of one man, Robert Nozick, who wrote a book called Anarchy, State, and Utopia. And I'm going to be reading about that book today. Of course, I can't read like the whole book into the podcast for you, but I can read some of it. And we're going to be talking about what minarchy is. And I chose to do this topic today because I think that just a lot of people don't know what it is. And, you know, a lot of people accuse me of, Austin, oh, you only care about money, advancing libertarian principles. Well, let me tell you something. I'm not going to make a dime by talking about minarchy today because it's not the kind of thing that it's going to get a big, huge audience. As a matter of fact, I expect this podcast today to not do anywhere near as well as what I did yesterday, which yesterday's show we were talking about the vagina voters, the people who are voting for Hillary Clinton because of the fact that she's just a woman. And a lot of people were angry about that, that we were calling them vagina voters. You know, it was the rise of pussy politics. And yeah, those were some controversial words, but that's exactly what it is. People who would vote for Hillary Clinton because she's a woman, vagina voters. It's just, it was just a crazy, you know, hilarious piece that someone wrote about why they're voting for her simply because she's a woman. So don't forget to check out that podcast too. Also, before we get started today, I wanted to ask you a favor. Do me a favor, please. Go to iTunes. Subscribe to us on iTunes. You can find the Freedom Report with Austin Peterson on iTunes. And if you enjoy the show today, you can leave us a 5-star review. You don't even have to have an Apple device to get iTunes. You can get iTunes on your computer and leave me a 5-star review. A written review will help me spread the ideas of minarchism around the world if you like these ideas. And if you don't have an Apple device and you don't want to download iTunes, you can, of course, find us on the Android app, which is Stitcher. Stitcher.com. You can go to Stitcher and you can find the Freedom Report podcast. So that way, every time I upload a show, you'll be able to get us. And thanks very much for being a listener. I really appreciate it. All right, so an introduction to minarchism. Minarchism, sometimes known as, quote, minimal statism, is a governmental framework that aims to keep government as small as possible and places an emphasis on constrained government power, minimal spending, and minimal levels of intervention. Minarchism is in keeping with liberal tradition, that's classical liberal tradition, and is one particular favor amongst libertarianism. Minarchism originally stemmed from the anarchist movement and was born out of many anarchists' disillusionment with the ideology. Minarchism was created as a result of the realization that the state is a, quote, necessary evil. If individual liberties are to be protected and maximized, and the term minarchism was coined by the famous anarchist Samuel Edward Konkin III. Such a framework was created, modified, and extended by many authors, particularly in the 60s and 70s. However, it was following the work of political philosopher Robert Nozick that minarchism received popular and widespread support. In his seminal 1974 work, Anarchy, State, and Utopia, Nozick discussed anarchism and its viability, concluding that it was impossible for a strictly anarchist society to flourish, since it offered no protections against violations of liberty, theft, murder, invasion by a foreign power. What was needed and justified, concluded Nozick, was a minarchist, or a, quote, night watchman state, having just enough power to prevent the violation of individual rights. Nozick went on to state that minarchism was the ultimate natural government. He claimed that a system of anarcho-capitalism would inevitably develop into a minarchist system, and so, given a tabula rasa, minarchism is not only needed and justified, but in fact, inevitable. The essential ideological underpinnings of minarchism, then, stem from a belief that, whilst the state is indeed evil, a state can be created that is limited enough in scope to be justifiable, but powerful enough to protect its citizens. The liberty of its citizens, as Nozick states. Our main conclusions about the state are that a minimal state, limited to the narrow functions of protection against force, theft, fraud, enforcement of contracts, and so on, is justified. That any more extensive state will violate persons' rights not to be forced to do certain things, and is unjustified. And that the minimal state is inspiring as well as right. Two noteworthy implications are that the state may not use its coercive apparatus for the purpose of getting some citizens to aid others, or in order to prohibit activities to people for their own good or protection. So let's break this down, what we're talking about here. And the reasons why they're talking, they believe that, or minarchists such as myself believe that a minimal state is necessary is because any of the solutions that anarcho-capitalists propose have the effect of government. So let me repeat that again so you can understand it. So in order for liberties to be protected, there do have to be some sort of stopgap measures, coercive measures. Even anarchists admit this. They are simply saying, well, there shouldn't be a monopoly on it. Well, minarchists say exactly the same thing. But whatever institutions would arise in a minarchist or anarchist society that would have the effect of coercion would necessarily mean that would necessarily be the same as a state, right? So any sort of coercion that would occur, even in an anarcho-capitalist utopia, would simply be the same as a government. An enforcement of a contract, for example, in an anarchist society, would have the same effect as government. And so I think that the problem with anarchists is that they don't understand is that the fulfillment of their philosophy would still lead to the rise of a minarchist state. Excuse me. So moving on, we can see the impact that minarchism would have on policy if we remove Nozick's description from the abstract and apply the minarchist ideal to the real world. Like most liberal and libertarian ideology, minarchism places a strong emphasis on the maximizing of individual liberty, and such an idea forms the basis of minarchist thought on what government's roles and responsibilities should be. Most minarchists believe that all but the most minimal of taxation should be considered unjustified. For example, there would be no government welfare, drugs, prostitution and gambling would not be criminalized. The government would likely not have a role in elements of society such as education, road building, telecommunications, or many other areas that modern states typically control. Whilst many minarchist ideas of specifically how a minarchist government would go about its policy, there is strong agreement over the basis of that policy. Minarchism's ultimate ends are, as we can see, in keeping with the political, social, and economic ideals of most libertarianism. And as a result, minarchism tends to be classified as a libertarian ideology. However, that is not to say that it has found universal support, even amongst that particular ideology. Many, quote, hardcore libertarians, for example, believing that any form of taxation is theft, see the fact that a minarchist government must still tax its citizens as an act of coercion, meaning minarchism can never be justified. However, many minarchists respond to such criticism with the idea that the government could be run with the proceeds of private donations, although it is difficult to say whether this would be possible. And actually, going off script here for just a moment, Actually, we at the Libertarian Republic do have an article that you should definitely Google when you're done. It's called Six Ways to Fund Public Services in a Libertarian Republic. And we talk about just six different ways that you can get revenue without resulting, without resorting to absolute coercion. One of the best ways is that I think in there is the lottery. The lottery is it absolutely is a tax. They call it a tax on people who are bad at math. But the reality is that the government does receive hundreds of millions of dollars of tax revenue. Of tax revenue from the lottery. And that is a way to fund government services, actually. And the founding fathers were the ones who sort of instituted that system. There's a famous lottery ticket signed by George Washington when they needed to build infrastructure. And so it is possible, theoretically, to fund services in a minarchist state and a libertarian republic. You just have to think outside the box. And of course, people say, well, you wouldn't be able to get enough revenue from all that. Well, the point is that the government would be much smaller. So you wouldn't need all the revenue that you need for the current government, because we wouldn't have all of these institutions. And all of the institutions that do the functions of that which we've already covered here, something like, you know, policing prostitution or gambling or distributing welfare or making drugs illegal, for example, those responsibilities would no longer exist. So you would not have a DEA. You know, you would not have a Department of Transportation. You would not have a Department of Education. You would not have net neutrality controlling telecommunications. And so the idea is that, you know, if you're looking to try and fund public services or those things which you think the government should be doing, perhaps providing a court system of arbitration, so between two parties to enforce contracts, that there most likely could be funded by non-coercive measures. And certainly there are plenty of other examples. Road building that goes on. Actually, I just was out with a friend the other day who explained to me, she's from Alaska, and she was telling me about how they have a community pool every year for who's going to plow the roads, and you know, they all compete for it, and it's sort of a free market style of cleaning the roads up in Alaska, because the government can't get out there to do it. And so it's sort of an interesting little case study, and something that you should think about whenever somebody says the old, you know, famous statist line, you know, who will build the roads. But getting back on the script here, whether or not minarchism is a viable ideology in practice remains to be seen. After all, no state has attempted to make reforms to anywhere near a minarchist level. To do so would require a catalyst of quite literally revolutionary proportions, something akin to the U.S. War of Independence or the Spanish Civil War. Since such events happen infrequently as it is, and are even less frequently spearheaded by groups with minarchist sympathies, the chances of seeing a government founded on minarchist principles are slim at best. Many use this fact to discredit minarchism, rejecting it out of hand as unrealistic and unworkable. These critics include libertarian Murray Rothbard, who decried Nozick's idea of a, quote, immaculate conception of a minarchist state, claiming that such an idea was preposterous and that no state has ever been created this way. Despite these criticisms, minarchism still enjoys considerable support and remains a hotly debated topic even now, nearly 40-50 years after it was defined. So that's the Night Watchman state in general, and I'm going to actually go over to the Wikipedia article too. I'm going to read from that. That last one was from a very informative blog called Homeland Stupidity, which had a really nice description. It was written by Rob Miller in 2006, and he was writing about what minarchism was, and that was a really nice little read there. Thank you, Robert. And we're going to discuss minarchism from the Wikipedia article now. This is just the basic description of what it means, and I'll break some of this down for you guys, and hopefully we can get you guys educated so you don't have to feel so bad when an anarchist calls you statist. You know, I didn't respond to Murray Rothbard's criticisms there. Of course, the issue is that you know, he's saying that the immaculate conception of a state, it's never happened before. Well, you know, that's the same thing that people say about anarchists, you know. So really, Rothbard's argument could be turned against his own philosophy and ideology of anarcho-capitalism. So, you know, I can reject that quite easily with a basic logical deduction. But let's continue. So minarchism, also known as minimal statism, is a political philosophy and a form of libertarianism. In the strictest sense, it holds that states ought to exist, as opposed to anarchy, and that their only legitimate function is the protection of individuals from aggression, theft, breach of contract, and fraud, and that the only legitimate governmental institutions are the military, police, and the courts. In the broadest sense, it also includes fire departments, prisons, the executive, and legislatures as legitimate government functions. Such states are generally called night watchman states. Minarchists argue that the state has no authority to use its monopoly of force to interfere with free transactions between people, and see the state's sole responsibility as ensuring that contracts between private individuals and property are protected through a system of law, courts, and enforcement. Minarchists generally believe a laissez-faire approach to the economy will most likely lead to economic prosperity. Some minarchists argue that a state is inevitable. Another common justification is that private defense and court firms would tend to show bias, unevenly representing the interests of paying clients. Robert Nozick in Anarchy, State, and Utopia argued that a night watchman state provides a framework that allows for any political system that respects fundamental individual rights. Ayn Rand is notable for her opposition to taxation while also holding that the elimination of taxation in a society should occur gradually. Here are the criticisms. Anarcho-capitalists, and that's all, that's the Wikipedia article when you see it's so funny. So go check it out on Wikipedia. It's like, here's a little description of ideology, and then the anarchists are like, criticisms! It's all a huge section of criticisms, bigger than the rest of the description, because of course the anarchists are like, how dare you? Anarcho-capitalists generally argue that government violates the non-aggression principle by its nature, because governments use force against those who have not stolen private property, vandalized private property, assaulted anyone, or committed fraud. Murray Rothbard argued that all government services, including defense, are inefficient because they lack a market-based pricing mechanism regulated by the voluntary decisions of consumers purchasing services that fulfill their highest priority needs, and by investors seeking the most profitable enterprises to invest in. Thank you, Murray. We know you love the free market, and so do I, but this is a really good criticism that I think that they pointed out earlier, is that the idea that if you had a free market in justice, well, whoever could pay the highest would get the best, the most justice. Murray Rothbard wrote, "The defense function is the one reserved most jealously by the state. It is vital to the state's existence, for on its monopoly of force depends its ability to extract taxes from its citizens. If citizens were permitted privately owned courts and armies, then they would possess the means to defend themselves against evasive acts by the government, as well as by private individuals." Now, one of the things there that you have to remember, of course, is that we are allowed to have private armies. Of course, we have Blackwater, and a lot of libertarians don't like Blackwater, which is such an interesting problem in foreign policy with libertarians, between anarchists and libertarians. And I want to tell the story real quick while we discuss and then get back into Murray Rothbard's criticisms of minarchy. But a few years ago at a Young Americans for Liberty conference, I sat up and I sort of gave a discussion on foreign policy to a bunch of libertarians. And this was right after the Boston bombing that had just occurred. And everyone was talking about it, and it was a perfect topic to discuss during our foreign policy panel. Or it wasn't a panel, it was just my speech. And I posed the question to the audience, to the yowlers, pop quiz hotshots, your marathon has just been bombed, ostensibly. At the time, we didn't know that they were locals, but ostensibly it was by Chechen rebels. This was supposed to be, we thought it was an attack initially by Muslim terrorists from Chechnya. And so the Chechen terrorists, we assumed that they were foreigners. So the question that I posed to the audience, based on what we knew at the time, the question that I posed was, pop quiz hotshots, who do you send in to go and extract justice, from these terrorists? If you had to defend yourself against a foreign threat in such a way, what would you do? And so I said, okay, here's a couple of options. One option is you use SEAL Team 6, for example. You could use, the state, the professional trained military of the United States to extract justice from the terrorists. And the other option that I gave the students was you can hire Blackwater. You can hire a private security firm to extract justice or to retaliate against those who had attacked us. So by show of hands, the audience was actually split down the middle. So that really is like, that was really an eye-opening moment, I think, not just for the audience, but for me as well, because, you know, it confirmed what I had suspected about libertarian foreign policy, is that there really isn't a firm, you know, this is the libertarian foreign policy. A lot of people, like, especially recently because of the rise of Ron Paul, will point to Ron Paul's foreign policy and say, this is libertarianism. Well, it's not necessarily the libertarian foreign policy, and you know, I've been criticized on this quite a bit because I've criticized Dr. Ron Paul's foreign policy for what I think is it's a bit naive and I think too pacifist. And a lot of people have said the same thing. A lot of libertarians said the same thing. Well, you know, I like Ron. I think his foreign policy is right. We need to definitely not be policemen of the world, which I definitely agree with as a minarchist. But I don't believe in no retaliation. I don't believe in no foreign policy. And so the problem here is that the idea is that you can have a private army. Well, a lot of libertarians, and I think a lot of these people probably come from the left end of the spectrum, they get angry when you talk about privatizing the military because that means that everybody could have a little private army all they wanted to, right? So you know, that all of the things, the awful things that Blackwater did in Iraq have been paraded out on to us, you know, from antiwar.com and from many other anarchists and minarchists, you know, people who do not want everybody to have private armies, right? But the problem is that Murray Rothbard is the anarchist who's arguing for private armies. So to him, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, Blackwater probably not in its current form, but theoretically a Blackwater in an anarchist state would be, you know, permissible. But you know what we already have right now that I think is a fairly effective form of that, other than just Blackwater, which is, you know, a, you know, officially licensed private mercenary firm, and well, which they're not called Blackwater anymore. They keep changing their name, but it's like Blackwater's A, and I can't remember what their most current iteration is. But the guy who founded it is a libertarian, just so you know, Eric Prince, and I think he was a big donor to Ron Paul. So if you're a Blackwater critic or a mercenary critic, you might want to check into Blackwater a little bit more. Read about Eric Prince. He's got a great book out where he talks about his support for Ron Paul. So moving on, we're talking about foreign policy here. We're discussing, you know, what it means to have a libertarian foreign policy in a minarchist state versus an anarchist state. So in a minarchist state, you would have a military. And Murray Rothbard, of course, is against this. He's like, no problem with militaries as long as they're privately owned. I don't want to say the whole thing that anarchists are going to get pissed and Robert Murphy's going to send me an email like, rawr, about the warlords taking over. But, you know, if everybody had a private army, there would probably be some warlords taking over. I'm just going to go out there, go ahead and say it. It is a real threat. It is an actual threat. It's not something that I think, you know, we're ever going to have to worry about, because I don't think we're probably ever, like a true minarchist, I don't think we're ever really going to get rid of the state. But in real life, not just Blackwater, let's look at one other option of people standing up and sort of a private army rising, you know, rising up out of the dust from nowhere, but the standoff at the Clive and Bundy Ranch. You know, it's funny, I was thinking this morning about the Bundy Ranch, because I saw that the Bureau of Land Management is going after somebody who owns a mine this morning. And I was thinking about the Bundy Ranch and the response to it, where the militias, the Oath members, the Oath Keepers members came out and they defended Clive and Bundy, and they stood down. The feds stood down. The BLM stood down after the standoff. I mean, they were pointing guns at the feds. You know, these basically militia members, a small private army, rose out of the dust in the United States to defend Clive and Bundy. Very exciting. Of course, all of the left-wingers and the Democrats and MSNBC and, you know, the left-wing establishment were all freaking out about that. They're like, you know, these militia members are terrorists. You know, they were calling them every name in the book. And most right-wingers, of course, they saw them as patriots and heroes. Rightly so. But the problem is then you look at what's happened with the riots in Baltimore, for example. Let's take a look at that most recent example. People, how come the left-wingers aren't talking about the Huey P. Newton Gun Club and the Black Panthers going out and defending their communities? You know, where are the Second Amendment advocates there? You know, there are many African-American communities that do believe strongly in the Second Amendment, and certainly if the Black Panthers or the Huey P. Newton Gun Club had showed up in force and you know, backed the police off, I'm sure a lot of left-wingers and Democrats would have been like, yeah, hell yeah, hell yeah, same way. But the problem is the reality is that the left doesn't support the gun rights of the right-wingers, and the right-wingers, well, I think they support the gun rights of everybody. So I won't put that criticism on the right wingers, because the right wingers tend to be more pro gun. But you know, let's see, what's a good example? How about the example of New York, Eric Garner? You know, what if instead of allowing himself to be choked out and you know, choked to death on the streets of New York, of course this would never happen, this is theoretically, but all of the members of his community had rallied around him and backed those cops off, you know, giving them a display of force and said, hey, listen, you're not going to kill this guy over some ridiculous dispute over paying cigarette taxes, okay? So at that point, you know, there would have been, you know, MSNBC reports, heroes, you know, Huey P. Newton Gun Club, you know, rallying for the rights of individuals, you know. So, but the problem is that the left wingers don't support everybody's gun rights, and the right wing does. But of course, there is that one little incident that we have to point to, and I'm getting way off script, but I'll get back on in a minute. That one little incident that we have to point to, of course, in California, where the Black Panthers actually staged a demonstration of gun rights by walking into the state capitol in Sacramento, California. And this is what caused Ronald Reagan, who was governor at the time, to sign anti-gun legislation. And so that is a really interesting case study, and that's something that I think liberals, and when I say liberals, I don't mean liberals like me, classical liberals, I'm talking about modern American liberals, the statist, you know, authoritarian Democrats. But those people need to look at that and see that as an example of why we need to maintain our right to bear arms, because they should have the right to police their own communities and to keep themselves safe. But when the Black Panthers did that, they were, they got a big backlash, and the backlash was from the right wingers, the Republicans, who did not support the right of those people to bear arms. And so we got gun control legislation from Ronald Reagan. So something to think about. Okay, so I wanted to cut this in because as soon as I finished the podcast, I had a really smart idea of a way to explain to you what a Night Watchman state would look like. And I think probably the perfect example of that is from Game of Thrones. And if you've watched Game of Thrones, you probably are familiar with the Night's Watch. Castle Black, Jon Snow. These are the people who they swear an oath of protection, where they go and they stand on the wall and they fight to defend the kingdoms of Westeros and of all of the kingdoms of the universe of George R. R. Martin's universe in Game of Thrones. And the idea is that the watchers on the wall do not get involved in the affairs of men. They simply protect the wall so that the wildlings and any monsters which are set to come from the north, when they say winter is coming, that means that I think it means some kind of zombie creatures are coming. But the job of the Night's Watch is not to get involved in the political affairs of the kingdoms. It's not to get involved with the politics between the warring clans. The job is simply to defend those clans. So if you're going to compare a minarchist state, you could say, hey, well, look, the Night's Watch is, you know, quote unquote, the government, even though, of course, all of the different kingdoms have their own little kings, you know, their political squabbles, which is the criticism that minarchists make of anarchy, where minarchists say that in an anarchistic society that you would have warlords going to war with each other. So the Game of Thrones is not the perfect example, of course, of a minarchist world, but it does show you there a basic example of like the Night Watchman state. So I just wanted to throw that in there, and I'm going to theme the podcast around it because I think that that's the interesting theme. But something to think about, the Night Watchman, the Watchers on the Wall, and that is essentially what libertarians argue, or excuse me, minarchists argue for. Well, moving on to criticisms of minarchy. Rothbard wrote that governments were not inevitable, noting that it often took hundreds of years for aristocrats to set up a state out of anarchy. He also argued that if a minimal state allows individuals to freely secede from the current jurisdiction to join a competing jurisdiction, then it does not, by definition, constitute a state. Well, I could disagree with you there. Linda and Morris Tannehill argue that no coercive monopoly of force can arise on free market and that government citizenry cannot desert them in favor of a competent protection and defense agency. Very interesting. All right, so I'm going to hop over here to the idea of the Night Watchman state. We're going to read about it, and so we're going to get a little bit of the etymology here. And this is a long podcast, and again, you know, this is teaching to the A students. You know, a lot of times, like yesterday's podcast was teaching to the, you know, maybe the C or D students, a little bit more dumbed down, perhaps. But the show that we're doing today is very, very deep, deep philosophical, jargon heavy kind of show. So I hope you're enjoying it so far. So what is a night watchman state? A night watchman state, or a minimal state, is variously defined by sources in the strictest sense. A form of government and political philosophy where the state's only legitimate function is the protection of individuals from assault, theft, breach of contract, and fraud. So the legitimate government institutions, it says, of course, military, police, courts, we've gone over this. Perhaps fires, fire stations, executive branch, judiciary, legislatures. These are legitimate government functions. So the advocacy of a night watchman state is known as minarchism. Minarchists argue the state has no right to use a monopoly of force to interfere with free transactions, of course, free trade, capitalism. And they see that the state's sole responsibility is ensuring that transactions between private individuals are free. And as such, minarchists generally believe in a laissez-faire approach. That's correct. That's us. The etymology of the word, the Night Watchman State, it was coined by a German socialist, Ferdinand LaSalle, in 1862 in a speech in Berlin. He criticized the bourgeois liberal limited government state, comparing it to a night watchman whose sole duty was preventing theft. The phrase quickly caught on as a description of limited government, even as liberalism began to mean a more interventionist state, sadly. Ludwig von Mises later opined that LaSalle tried to make limited government look ridiculous, but that it was no more ridiculous than governments that concern themselves with the preparation of sauerkraut, with the manufacture of trouser buttons, or with the publication of newspapers. Boom! Thank you, Mr. von Mises, right? So that's the kind of stuff, you know, that you have to slap back. That's the intellectual equivalent of my smackdown of socialists when I was on John Stossel's show a couple months ago. And I made the joke, I go, you know, they always say libertarians, like, oh, you don't like government, why don't you move to Somalia? And I say, well, you know, if you love government, why don't you move to North Korea? Right? So the socialists are always making fun of the fact that, oh, you believe in a limited government and stuff. But Ludwig von Mises in his day said brilliantly, oh, yeah, it's hilarious. A night watchman state. That's so ridiculous. Well, how ridiculous is it that a government would prepare sauerkraut, you know, or make trouser buttons or publish newspapers? Well, you think that's ridiculous, but go to Russia because they do publish newspapers there and they do publish, they do make television there. There are lots of countries around the world where that is the responsibility of the government, is to prepare everything. You know, minarchists generally justify the state on the grounds that it's the logical consequence of adhering to the non-aggression principle. This is really the key juice here. This is the real flavor minarchists, we argue that anarchism is immoral because it implies that the non-aggression principle is optional. Okay? They argue that this is because the enforcement of laws under anarchism is open to competition. All right, so this is an argument that would only apply to anarcho-capitalism, as no traditional anarchists argue for a free market law system. That's correct. Another common justification is that private defense and court firms would tend to represent the interests of those who pay them enough. Okay. Robert Nozick in Anarchy, State, and Utopia argued that a night watchman state provides a framework that allows for any political system that respects individual rights. That's correct. So, and, you know, of course, there's an enormous, enormous criticism section here. Let me pull from some of the more interesting parts of the criticisms of minarchism. Social conservatives, you know, people like Rick Santorum, Mike Huckabee, et cetera, they argue that the state should maintain a moral outlook and legislate against behavior commonly regarded as culturally destructive or immoral, that, indeed, the state cannot survive if its citizens do not have a certain kind of character, integrity, and civic virtue. And so ignoring the state's role in forming people's ethical dispositions can be disastrous. Woo! This is why I'm not a social conservative. Social liberals and social democrats argue that a government ought to take appropriate private wealth in order to ensure care for disadvantaged or dependent people such as children, the elderly, the physically and mentally disabled, immigrants, homeless, poor, unemployed, caretakers, victimized minority groups, of course. Proponents of social anarchists criticize the state as being founded around the protection of private property and the mode of production that surrounds it. Thus, the minarchist state is a reductionist form of the welfare state and not substantially different from it in purpose. Social anarchists argue that only with the abolition of the state, whether it be a faux compassionate welfare state or the boldly unconcerned austerity state, can truly justify economic relations and prosperity for all come about. Anti-government capitalists generally argue that private defense companies and court firms would have to have a good reputation in order to stay in business. Furthermore, Lyndon Morris Tannehill, who definitely did not put themselves into this Wikipedia article, argued that no coercive monopoly of force can arise in a free market, and that government citizenry cannot desert them in favor of a competent protection and defense company. Yeah, right. Anyway, so I wonder what you guys think about this. You know, there's certainly lots of other criticisms of minarchy and, you know, there's criticisms of anarchy. And I think that it's important for us to discuss these ideas because this is the base of our philosophy. And I would really highly encourage you guys to go in. I'm not going to read the, you know, the whole Anarchy, State, and Utopia description here. I think you guys should go do it on your own. Plus, this podcast is going way long. I don't know if you guys are even listening. I mean, we're at 34 minutes now. So I'm going to go ahead and cut her off here, ladies and gentlemen. If you enjoy the show today, do us a favor. Go to iTunes.com. And you can subscribe to us, the Freedom Report, there. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, and written review will help us spread the message. Again, if you don't have an Android, an Apple device, you can find us on Android. Go to Stitcher, stitcher.com, get the Freedom Report. You can download us once our new episodes come out. And don't forget to come back every single day to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at the Libertarian Republic.